The Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, was what really one of the cornerstones of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal program. And I think Wisconsin's natural areas certainly benefited from the great influx of labor that came into the state. And certainly at Devil's Lake, that was the case. And Bob Moore, has put together a very entertaining book about Devil's Lake and the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I'm really pleased to have him with us today to talk about the CCC, reflect on it, and certainly to answer your questions or hear your comments. Did anyone in your family take part in the CCC programs? What stories did you hear? Have you visited Devil's Lake? That's another area. Do you like or live in the area, like the area? What impact has it had on communities nearby? Those are some of the questions you might have. And if you do, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or if you want to post on my Facebook page, just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Maybe you've got some photos that you'd like to post relating to Devil's Lake or the CCC. We'd love to see them. Bob Moore, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for taking time to be with us. You do a wonderful job in the book of describing the Devil's Lake. It's such an incredible natural wonders, and there are a lot of people who have never gotten a chance to visit it. Paint a picture of that area for us.
Well, thanks. I was a bit of a latecomer myself, actually, to Devil's Lake, and in the course of doing the research on this book, I found so many people who had gone back so many years and their visits. So, like I said, I'm kind of a latecomer, but it's an impressive place. And my first visit actually was in the winter. And I have my wife to thank for that, I think, because after moving to Wisconsin in 2003, I knew about the lakes and the areas, but it seemed to me like one lake was just as good as another lake in Wisconsin, and my wife Lois knew better, and she kept saying turn in here, and it's just another lake, and I finally talked me into turning in, and it was an impressive place even in winter. It's just it's not another Wisconsin lake. It's a special lake in terms of geology, in terms of human history too, and of course in terms of the Civilian Conservation Corps. But it was a pretty impressive site.
There was a time when Devil's Lake was a site of a lot of luxury hotels and spas. When was that, and what led to the decline of that particular aspect of tourism?
Yeah, that was a fascinating part that I had never realized before until I dug in a little bit to the history of Devil's Lake. And the resort time period was roughly from the 1860s till slightly after the turn of the century, about 100 years ago. The high point was right around 1900 or that time frame. And there were a couple of pretty fancy type resorts on the lake, kind of surprising. In many ways, it had to do with the development of the railroad. The railroad at the time had a line coming in right through the park, and it made it very easy for folks to get to and from the park by rail in those early days, especially folks from Chicago. And many wealthy folks from Chicago could easily catch a train downtown there in Chicago and in a short time be right there at Devil's Lake. So there were some resorts built there, the most famous of which is called Cliff House. And you could step off the train, and on one side you'd have a few feet of the shoreline right there at Devil's Lake, and you take a few steps on the other side, and there's the Cliff House Resort. And it was a pretty fancy place for that time period. They had fancy dining rooms. They had excursion tours that would go out on the lake, and there were about three or four of those resorts there at Devil's Lake around the turn of the century.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to look at. I hadn't realized that either until I had a chance to read through your book. So that declined, and maybe set the stage for us for this whole CC business, CCC. What was going on economically and politically that made this New Deal a necessity?
To get to the first part, the decline of the resorts had a lot to do with the dispute between the railroads and the resort owners over fares and fees, and it's kind of it's not really complicated, but it was a disagreement that kind of spilled over, and the rates and fees kind of fell apart, and then the resorts kind of fell apart. But another thing that was a factor there was also in the 1920s, the development of the automobile, of course, which boosted an already popular park into something more. And when that all ended, as far as the prosperity of the 1920s, the popularity of the park didn't end. Even though the resorts were gone, people still had their cars. They could still go to the lake. They could still camp at the lake. But it became for the Wisconsin Parks officials a different problem they had to deal with there at the park. You had people who'd get in their cars, drive to the park. They could drive right down to the shoreline, set up a tent, and just stake out their own little bit of heaven there and enjoy the park. And that was fine and nice for them. But with the overload that the park was getting, they felt they had to do something. And they really couldn't do anything at the onset of the Depression. There really wasn't enough money for the state to do anything. And with the CCC program that was initiated in 1933, the manpower to do something about improvements to the park came about.
Yeah, it really came up. Well, so how did that idea come about for the CCC?
Well, it came from President Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. He offered folks in the country a New Deal. Your listeners might remember that term from their history class days, and it was going to be a New Deal for everyone. And the first priority for the president was to initiate some type of relief for people. And Roosevelt had some experience as governor of New York before he became president with the conservation program for young people. So it was his idea to naturally take that framework and expand it on a national level. And one of the first things he did when he came into office was he said, well, we're going to set up programs of relief for a lot of different people, but we know this works. We know this works for young people, so we're going to set up a what became known as a tree army mm-hmm. of young people between the ages roughly of 18 to 25 who would be organized into groups or companies, they called them, and then they would engage in conservation work all over the country.
It's fascinating. Bob Moore, our guest today, author of Devil's Lake, Wisconsin, and the Civilian Conservation Corps. Happy to talk with him today. You can join in with your own question, reflection, or comment at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. So 18 to 25-year-old men from all over, they can apply. How did they apply, by the way?
Yeah, they had some standards and kind of rules that were set up. They were tweaked and changed a little bit during the course of the program, but the general outline was that you had to be an unmarried male between the ages of 18 and 25, and that made you eligible to sign up. Originally, they were looking at people who were on relief rolls. Later on, that changed a little bit, but that was pretty much the outline as to who would be in the CCC. And you would go to an office in your local town, a labor office, usually a state labor office, and they would ask you some questions. They'd fill out a form for you, and they'd have kind of, I guess it's a quota system of how many folks they could take. There really wasn't a problem turning people away, but you'd be assigned then, if you were eligible, you'd be assigned to a company, a unit company, and you'd join about 200 other young men. And then they would assign that company to an area of conservation somewhere in the state.
And the payment system on this, so the monthly payment, the guys got to keep $5, and the rest of the money, what was it, $25 a month?
Yeah, the total was $30 a month.
$30 a month, that's right.
And and they knew up front that they didn't see $30 at the end of the month. At the end of the month, as you mentioned, they were handed $5. And the other $25 went to the folks back home, and there was no option or no changes in that. That was just the way the system was going to work. So $25 went home, and you got $5 at the end of the day or at the end of the month.
And that $25 made a big impact, as you point out, in many families' lives at the time.
Absolutely. It would make a great down payment on a washing machine. In some cases, it would pay the rent on an apartment in those days. So it sure made a difference to the people back home.
And, of course, the whole thing made a big difference to those individuals, these young men. Many of them probably had never even been out of their home area, 30 miles from home even.
That's correct. The general idea to start with in the CCC was hopefully that they could assign these young men to places that were, if not near home, at least in their same state or area. But it came to pass very quickly that they discovered many of the conservation work that was really needed was out west, out in the mountain west and out in the west coast. And the manpower was on the east coast. And so there was a time where companies got sent out west. And there's some Wisconsin boys who signed up thinking they might be going to Devil's Lake and having a good time. And they went out to the Yosemite Valley out in California instead. So that's kind of the way it worked. But generally speaking, as a rule, they were assigned to their core area. And by that, I mean the country was divided up into regional corps. They called them like Army corps. And Wisconsin and Illinois and Michigan were one corps. And so so most of the time, these young men were assigned to areas there. And most of the time, if you were a Wisconsin fellow and signed up, you were probably going to be somewhere in Wisconsin.
And you did get to at least make a preference, if not, I mean, you couldn't say for sure, but you could at least offer a preference, and that helped.
Yes.
Nick in Green Bay. Nick, I hope you'll hang on there to raise your point. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. Then we'll be back with more about the CCC and Devil's Lake. The Civilian Conservation Corps accomplished a lot here in the state of Wisconsin, in many areas of the state, including at Devil's Lake. And Robert Moore, has a book out on that. It's called Devil's Lake, Wisconsin and the Civilian Conservation Corps. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. You may have some questions to ask, or maybe some experiences that you or parents, grandparents might have had. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Nick in Green Bay has been waiting a long time, so I want to give Nick a chance. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. I appreciate you taking my call. I love
sure.
your show.
Thank you.
I was 18, so I'm 39 now, so it's been years, but I applied for a job at the Wisconsin Conservation Corps. That was the best job I've ever had. It was a year program. Finish out the year, you get either $500 in cash or a $2,200 scholarship for school, and we did what you're talking about. We worked at all the Brown County parks here in northeast Wisconsin. It was the best job I've ever had, best experience I've ever had. It made a huge imprint on me.
And you're familiar certainly with the WCC as well.
Yeah,
Bob.
Right. The comment that your listener made could have come and could have been made in 1939 or 1940 by a lot of those CCC boys, because they felt the same way about their experiences. It's kind of an interesting legacy of the CCC that in many ways it kind of carries on today through the YCC, the Youth Conservation Corps, Wisconsin Conservation Corps, and other smaller type of efforts. But the effect is still the same, to boost the conservation effort in Wisconsin and elsewhere, and also to do something for the young men, too. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, thank you, Nick, for calling. I appreciate it very much. And along with that, we had Facebook comment from Janine. My grandfather was a part of the CCC. I very much enjoyed hearing his stories of the time and reading letters he'd sent home. He was part of a very large family and felt proud that as a 18-year-old or so, he could help his family financially. And I think there was a lot of that as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there was kind of a sense of duty among those old CCC boys that, they were helping the family somehow. Because, when you're 18 and unemployed and you're out there in the middle of the Great Depression, you're competing against adults out there for jobs, too. And it's even tougher on the young people in the sense that they found the job task much more difficult. For example, in 1933, at the height of the Depression, the unemployment was at 25%, and for teenagers, it was running at times over 70, sometimes 75%. So it was tough for them too.
Greg in Augusta, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My father is 92 years old. and he was in the Civilian Conservation Corps. And I remember him talking about getting his $5 at the end of the month and $25 home that he never saw. He was hoping to go to veterinary school, but then it turned out his family needed the money to survive. But one thing I remember the most that I thought would be perhaps a good question is that he said that the CCC camps were quite military style in the way they lived. And here he was away from home. His home was in Augusta, but he was in a camp in Antigo, but still in the state of Wisconsin. And how it was tough for him to be just a young fella away from home. And then, you know, about 6 years later, he wound up at Guadalcanal. And he always said that the CCC actually prepared him for World War II.
You know, I'm really glad you called because, Bob, that's something you point out in your book.
That's correct. The CCC was arguably the most successful of all the New Deal programs and had very little criticism of the program. But the one thing that was brought up and the one thing that many young men sort of had trepidations about was the military aspect or style of the organization. The camps themselves were run by the U.S. Army, so you had to do things the Army way if you were going to be in the CCC. And there were some questions in some people's minds that, well, I don't know if I want the Army pushing me around and telling me what to do. And President Roosevelt made it clear that the boys in the CCC were not in the military, they were not enrolled in the military, but they would have to be subjected to military-style rules in order to make this system work. So that there was that element of it. But the last point your caller made is also a good one, that as it turned out, that criticism kind of faded. And what ended up happening was when World War II began, the Army began looking for these CCC folks who had some military-style discipline behind them, who knew kind of how to organize and live in large groups. And many of them became the corporals and sergeants of the U.S. Army going into World War II.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Greg. I appreciate that call. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, we're on to you. Hi, Dave.
Well, hello, Larry, and hello to your guest. I don't know if there's one in Wisconsin. I've never seen it or heard of it, but we were traveling through Lower Michigan a couple of years ago, and we ran across the Civilian Conservation Corps Museum. It's about 100 miles, between 75 and 100 miles south of the Mackinac Bridge and just off to the west of Highway 127 on Michigan 113. And it's just like stepping into the past to go in there. They have the barracks and they have a mess hall. They have a kind of a collection of different fire towers and a lot of history and so forth. And for anyone who has any interest in the CCCs, I would recommend even a weekend trip over there. It would be worth the trip. We found, actually, the place was closed when we happened to stop, but there were some fellas there doing some maintenance work, and they let us in and showed us around. And I worked with a couple of fellas. I've been retired for a few years now, but I worked with some fellas who had been in the CCC, and they spoke with such pride of their time in the CCC. It was one of the high moments in their life because they had been, you know, saddled with the Depression, and many of them, the families couldn't afford to keep them at home. It was a way to get out and make a living and develop some pride. As far as the military aspect of it, I've heard that said also that this was one of those unplanned things that happened. It did prepare guys for World War II. I'm not sure what Glenn Beck would think of sending guys off to a military-style camp today, but anyway, those are my comments. And as far as the camp over there, it's well worth the stop for anyone who's interested.
Thank you very much for calling. Bob?
Thanks. I know of the camp that he – I haven't been to that camp, but I know the camp he's talking about in Michigan. And it is true that that in many of the states around the country, if there is something left or anything left, there is an attempt by state parks and other officials to preserve that. And I understand Michigan has done a good job of that. The buildings that house the CCC boys were taken down at the onset of World War II. So in many places, there's not a whole lot to see. And in all the research that I've done on CCC camps, it's very rare that you can find the actual buildings that are still there. I can say there is a place in Wisconsin where you can still see some of the buildings, and it's in Madison. It's at the UW Arboretum in Madison. And there was a CCC camp there during the Great Depression. And because of the status of the Arboretum as kind of university property, not all of those buildings got taken away or were destroyed. And some of them are still there. And I know the folks over there at the Arboretum, of course, know about this. And in the course of folks who'd like to tour the Arboretum, besides looking at the other great features that are there, if they ask about the CCC buildings, the folks there will direct them, and you can go by. They're not generally open for visitors, but it's a good way to kind of see what life was like. And they have maybe 4, 5, 6 buildings there that they use as garage areas and storage areas and so on. And most people don't know what they are, but if you ask, it's a way to go back to the CCC days, at least for a little while.
And thanks again, Dave, for calling. And frankly, he made his points about the various buildings. They first had to construct some living quarters and eating quarters and latrines and everything else before they could really get going.
Absolutely. At Devil's Lake, they had an advance team come in, and they set up a tent camp for the boys. And that's what they lived in for a couple of months until they could construct the barracks buildings and the other buildings that were associated with the CCC camp. Interestingly enough, in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, the building construction was bid out to local contractors. These CCC boys didn't know how to put up buildings. They were teenagers, and they didn't know the kind of the skills that they were going to need. So good thing was that some folks in the nearby towns, in this case Baraboo, which is not far from Devil's Lake, got a chance to gain some employment by putting up some of the buildings there and drilling the water wells and so on.
Yeah. And I think the people that were leading at Devil's Lake, as you write in your book, did a pretty good job of public relations with the community in that sense. And sometimes food, too, but also there would be at least one annual open house kind of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was every camp had an open house. Usually it was in April, kind of the anniversary of when the CCC began. And it was clean house time. It was spruce up time. The boys took the afternoon and they got out the scrubbers and cleaned everything in the camp. And then usually on a Sunday, it would be open house, and the folks from town would come in and be invited to look around, ask questions. Everybody in the camp would be in their dress uniforms. Most of the time they'd be asked if they'd like to stay and experience a CCC camp dinner. The only requirement was that they needed to know in advance so they knew how much food to prepare. And I know at one of the camps they said, "Well, we'd like you to pay for your meal to kind of help things along." And the fee usually was about 25 cents a person, 30 cents a person to have dinner there at the CCC camp.
Oh, great story. Nancy in Waukesha, we turn to you now. Hi, Nancy.
I wanted to call and thank the author so much for writing this book. It really opened up a part of my grandparents' life and my mother's also, that we always heard about Devil's Lake and how great it was. My grandfather was Eugene Odbert Jr., the camp supervisor.
In your book, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'd sure like to have a much longer talk with you because, Eugene Odbert Jr. was one of the most fascinating characters I found in researching the book. He worked not for the CCC, actually, but for the National Park Service, and it was the National Park Service who supervised all the work there at Devil's Lake. And I mentioned in my book that if there was one person that had the biggest impact on what people saw there and what the CCC did at Devil's Lake, it was the NPS supervisor, Eugene Odbert. So I'm glad you called in because he was really a central figure in the development of Devil's Lake out there.
Yeah, we sent a copy to my great-aunt, my grandpa's sister, and she said when she opened it and saw her brother's picture, it just brought tears to her eyes. So thank you so much.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I hope I can make contact with you again sometime.
You'll have to. And it's pretty easy to do. Actually, Nancy, if you go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, there's a contact for Bob right there and some information on the book as well.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate your program.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's see, we've got lots of emails here that I should get to. Pat's wondering if there are records of CCC workers. I know my grandpa worked with the CCC on the stone bridges over Six Mile Creek in Wanakee.
Yeah, that's a tough question. There are really two, and to be honest, really only one source. In the course of my research, I never found any rosters, really, of official documents showing the names of people. However, each camp usually published some type of newspaper or newsletter, and it was mostly just for the boys at camp. In those documents, you can find names of people, occasionally possibly rosters, names, and addresses. It just depends on what the boys decided to print. I know that the Wisconsin Historical Society has a collection of all the known newsletters from all the CCC camps in the United States at their Madison archives. And on microfiche, and it's possible to go and look at those newsletters. What you would have to know is you'd have to know which location your relative served, or perhaps even a company number would be beneficial. But it's not impossible, but it's a tough task to try and pin it down.
Joan in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I believe there's a building in Milwaukee, actually in Shorewood, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee, that is what's left of CCC work. It's a lodge that serves fish fries on Friday, and I'm not sure if it's part of the Estabrook Park or it's on the Milwaukee River. And it's quite lovely, and there's a massive fireplace. People have weddings there. And I believe it's a CCC building.
And we had an email from Mariah in Milwaukee. I'm quite certain that there are still CCC buildings in a former camp right outside Grand Park in South Milwaukee.
Cool.
The CCC built the Seven Bridges Trail in the park, in Grand Park.
Well, this would be on the opposite end of Milwaukee, on the north side in Shorewood.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the Milwaukee camps, but I do know that a lot of the work in the CCCs in the Milwaukee area was done through the county, and they put a lot of folks to work on county parks and amenities dealing with that. And it did involve structures, bridges, footpaths, and possibly bigger structures, although I'm not familiar with the one you're talking about. But it doesn't surprise me that that's the case.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, we can talk a little bit more about what life was like for those guys. You describe it so well in your book. Maybe talk a little bit about that. What was a day like for those guys?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, their day started I don't know if it started with a bugle call, but kind of a wake-up call of some kind about 6 or 6:30 in the morning. They had a chance to get dressed, and then they'd go over to the mess hall for breakfast. And then after that, they could go back to the barracks, kind of clean up, kind of get their work clothes going, kind of organize themselves. And then they'd report outside their barracks about 7:45 or so. And waiting for them would be the supervisors. And in the case of Devil's Lake, would be the National Park supervisors like Eugene Odbert and others, who would line them up for assignments and say, in effect, okay, we're going to have this group of 20 of you men load up in the trucks, and we're going to go over to the west side of the park and plant some trees today, and we'll have all the equipment there for you. And then another group might be over on the north shore helping with the buildings. Another would be clearing brush on the south side. Another might be quarrying work. So they'd all get assignments and go out to the work locations and spend the day working out there. And they'd have a noon break. Most of the time, the meals would be carried out, kind of brown bag styled out to them. Although at Devil's Lake, it was common for them to come back to camp for their noon meal because all of the work was in the camp boundary, so they didn't have to go too far. And then the afternoon, they'd be out working again, come back to the camp in trucks at about 4:30. get cleaned up if they needed to clean up. Well, they would clean up and after a day's work like that. And then they'd be back in the mess hall for dinner at about 6 o'clock or so. And then after that, the evening would be pretty much their own time. Mm-hmm. They couldn't leave the park without permission. There was kind of a sign-out procedure if they wanted to leave, so it wasn't like you had 200 boys suddenly exiting the park or exiting the camp and going their own way. But most of the times they had to organize sports at the camp in the after-dinner hours. They had card games. They had things they could do. A few people could get passes, and at Devil's Lake it was great because the camp was about a quarter mile from the South Shore. So if you could get a pass, you could walk down there to the South Shore and get wet a little bit.
Swim a little bit, sure. Mm-hmm,
sure, and be back. So,
and there was there were education programs, too, that you wrote about that really gave many of those young men tools for later on.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was almost a second thought. Once they got going in the CCC, they thought, well, we have a lot of folks here who could use some help, not only help in terms of conservation work help, but also just basic help, and they ended up having what they called an education advisor assigned to every camp. And an education advisor was usually, not always, but usually a teacher from the town, from Baraboo, let's say, in the case of Devil's Lake, who would be hired to come out and offer classes for the boys in all kinds of things, not only the basics, reading, writing, arithmetic, but also job skills. And the National Parks folks would help with some job skill things. So they developed quite a program. And, it's an interesting fact that some of the CC boys were not literate. They couldn't read or write. And the CCC educated about 40,000 of those folks all over the country to read and write right there in the camp. So it was that was a great benefit.
Pete in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. But I'm going.
Oh, we're losing you. I'm sorry. He's breaking up. I think his comment had to do with today's economy might be perfect for a new CCC.
That's a provocative and interesting question, and is one that I get quite often. And it is one to ponder whether, considering the fact that the CCCs was so successful in the 1930s, whether it's possible to try something like that this time around. That's a tough call. I can say that, of course, there are conservation programs on a smaller scale than we were talking about from the 1930s. And we mentioned those before, the YCC, Youth Conservation Corps, and Wisconsin Conservation Corps, and they do a great job. It's a little more problematic as whether it would be possible or successful to organize that many young men on a conservation effort like that. The CCC program enrolled a little less than 3 million young men. They were in camps all over the country, thousands of camps of 200 each. So it would be a pretty massive undertaking to do that today. So it would be an interesting experiment. I'm not sure how successful it would be in 2011.
I had a Facebook comment from Nicole who says, caught your show on my drive to Devil's Lake State Park from Decorah, Iowa this morning.
I wish I was in the back seat.
Me too. It's a beautiful place. And the last thing, in the last 30 seconds, what's the lasting legacy of the CCC at Devil's Lake?
The lasting legacy is something you see when you get to the park. When your visitor is going to pull into the park in the North Shore, they're going to drive down a little incline, and the entrance station is right there. And as soon as they pass the entrance station and look off to the lake, they're going to see the legacy of the CCC. They're going to see the buildings that they built. They're going to see the campground areas that were put in. If they're going to go hiking there today, the trails that were put in, and I might add the trails by hand. The Park Service said we don't want a lot of explosive. We don't want any explosive devices here at the park. So a lot of that was by hand. So they're going to see it when you get to the park.
Bob, thank you so much. Bob Moore is the author of Devil's Lake, Wisconsin, and the Civilian Conservation Corps. A fascinating read. And I appreciate him being with us. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for having me.